Welcome to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. I'm your host, Ryan Hartley. This podcast exists to inspire and encourage your heart-centered leadership. Each week, I share interviews with some of the greatest heart-centered leaders in the world. And I hope that our time spent together helps you leave a heartprint where those around you are left better than yesterday. Please visit abty.co.uk if you would like us in your corner. These interview sessions are brought to you by Matt Media Online Marketing, an independent agency who specialise in content marketing, helping business owners get their message seen by the right audience. If you want to get your business seen through the power of social media, head to mattmedia.online. On episode 234, I welcome Dr. Gary Chapman back to the podcast. We were fortunate enough to have a conversation with Dr. Gary 2 years ago on episode 112. On that occasion, we talked about his best-selling book, a book that has sold over 20 million copies, The Five Love Languages. On this occasion, we're talking about Gary's new book, The Five Traits of a Healthy Family. This conversation is an absolute blessing. The book is an absolute blessing to all of us who want to be the best parents that we can be. It's episode 234 with Dr. Gary Chapman. Dr. Gary Chapman, welcome back to the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast. How are you?
Well, Ryan, I'm fine, and it's great to be back with you again.
Oh, so good. I reflect back on our conversation. I think it was December, January of 2021, and what a blessing, what a gift that episode and that conversation was to our community. And I just want to honor you and thank you again. Even as 2.5 years later, that is a conversation that continues to have left an imprint on my heart. So thank you so much for that.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed being with you. You know, that the concept of the love languages has helped a lot of people through the years.
Yeah, and I'm really excited about your new book, the one that you're going to be bringing out soon, which is The Five Traits of a Healthy Family. That's really like dear to me. It's really important to me. I've been with my wife since I was 15, so we're over 20 years together. And the life languages was really helpful in keeping that going. But also, I've got two young children. I've got a 10-year-old and an 8-year-old. And I want to be the best dad I can be. And I'm just grateful that you're putting out resources like this that help good people like me try and lead a healthy family. Because, you know, many of us didn't come from what might be classed as a traditionally healthy family. And I'm trying to figure it out as we go. So having resources like this incredible book is going to bless many, many people who have the heart for being the best parent they can be, but maybe haven't seen otherwise, shall they say.
Yeah, I think in today's world, almost everyone that comes into my office for counseling, somewhere along the line will say, I grew up in a very dysfunctional family. Mm-hmm. And really, they don't have a picture of what a healthy family looks like. And this book, I think, is going to help them, because I do believe that deep inside every married couple, and especially when they have children, they want to be good parents and they want to have a healthy family. And if they had one, then it's much easier. If they didn't, it'll take more effort. But I do believe that any family can have a healthy family. And that's what this book is all about.
Mm. Yeah. One of the things that you really say at the end of the book, which is these five traits are as old as humanity. They've been there since the start of all time. And I guess my first question is, do you think then that people have gone away from them, or these five original traits are no longer serving families? Why have we gone away from, if they're as old as time, why have we drifted? Do we not see them as relevant, or is it something else?
You know, I think as time has gone on, and not only in English-speaking culture, but in many cultures, we have come up with the idea that we have a better plan. And we've also come up with the idea that the main purpose in life for me is to be happy. Right. And so if you're not making me happy in this relationship, then I'm out of this relationship. And so we have many broken families. I mean, we have thousands of children who are growing up in single parent homes because one of the parents bailed out, you know, and sometimes, of course, it's because a parent died or that sort of thing. But yeah, I think it's because more and more we tend to say, well, you know, the Bible is old. It was ancient. This is a new world. It is a new world, no question about that. All the technology and everything that we have. But the fundamental principles of what a healthy family looks like are still true. And if we apply them, then we will have the kind of family that we would really like to have.
Yeah, it's powerful. And I guess even those that have what might be described as a nuclear family still intact, there are forces at play that are drawing attention out of the home. You know, maybe the parents will be at work so often, they'll come home lacking presence. You know, they'll still be thinking about the work that's there to be done. There'll be a stress and there'll be a degree. So even those that still have what looks like on the outside a functioning whole family can still very much on the inside take some things in terms of how to create. One of the things I love you say is about creating the right emotional climate within the family.
Yeah, I think the attitude of service to each other is fundamental to a healthy family. You know, Jesus said about himself, "I did not come to be served, I came to serve." And he went on to say, and to give my life a ransom for others, which is the message of the gospel. Yeah. But the attitude is, I'm here to enrich the lives of the people around me. Mm. Now, if a husband has that attitude, you know, toward his wife, I'm here to help you become the person you believe God wants you to become. And I'm here to help our children develop and reach their potential for God and good in the world. And if a wife has that same attitude toward her husband and toward the children, then they teach that attitude to the children. You know, here are the things. Have you noticed what mother does for us? You notice what daddy does for us? Now, here's your job so you can help mom and daddy. And at the appropriate age, we're teaching them how to serve, you know, mom and dad and how to serve each other. This is fundamental. The opposite of an attitude of service is an attitude of selfishness. I'm in this relationship for what I can get out of it. If you don't meet my needs, if you don't make me happy, then I'm going to bail out. It's the opposite. Two selfish people will never have a good marriage. But two people who choose an attitude of love and serving each other are on the road to having a healthy relationship.
Friends, thank you for being here so far. I just want to have a heart-to-heart moment with the men. Men, are you tired of going it alone? Do you want to connect with other men who have been there, who have gone before you? Then Akira is the group for you. We know that as men, we're supposed to have it all figured out. But the truth is, none of us have all the answers. Well, that's where Akira comes in. Our group of successful men is here to provide you with the support, guidance, and advice that you need to achieve your goals. We don't just talk the talk, we walk the walk. Our members have been through the ups and downs of life, and we've come out the other side wiser and stronger. We want to share our knowledge and experience with you so that you can avoid the pitfalls and reach your potential. Akira is our brotherhood, a place where men can be vulnerable, share their struggles, and celebrate their victories. We meet regularly to discuss the issues that matter most to us, from career, finances, relationships, and personal growth. And we do it all in a safe and confidential environment. So if you're ready to level up in life and become the best version of you, the best version of you for yourself and those you lead, then consider joining Akira today. You can find out all the information that you need at abty.co.uk/Akira. The link's in the show notes. We're waiting for you, brother.
One of the things that has shaken me to my core of the five love languages, the very last page, I think you say the words, "For all the love we don't receive as children, we become adults that seek that in the world." And I've met many adults that have a posture on service, but it comes from an unhealthy place. It's almost like they lead for love rather than from love. And I guess, how do we help then our family unit be healthy in serving from love so that they can become the living embodiment of Jesus, as opposed to needing and seeking something from the world?
Yeah, I think if we love others in order to get something, it ceases to be biblical love. It's really manipulation. Right. I'm trying to manipulate you to do what I want you to do. True love is simply thinking in terms of, how can I enrich the other person's life? And this kind of love is a choice. This kind of love does not begin with an emotion. It begins with a choice. Mm. I'm in this relationship with you, or we have these children, and I'm choosing to have an attitude of love and service to you to help you become and help them become what they would like to become. Mm. So when we recognize that this kind of love doesn't begin with a feeling. Now, it affects our feelings, to be sure. It doesn't begin with a feeling. It begins with an attitude. Mm. And we choose our attitude. We do not choose our emotions. We choose our attitudes. Every single day, we choose the attitude. Mm. Lord, today, what can I do to enrich the lives of my family members? Mm. And we try to communicate that to the family. You know, and what we want the children to grow up with is the idea that in our family, we serve other people. I remember when our kids were like 10, 11, 12, I'd put some rakes in the back of the car and drive through the neighborhood looking for yards that had not been raked. The leaves had not been raked in the fall. And I would knock on the door and say, "Hi, I'm Gary Chapman. I live down the street and I'm trying to teach my children how to serve other people. And if you don't mind, we'd like to rake your leaves for you."
Yeah.
They would say what? And I'd repeat my little speech and they would say, "Oh, I would love for you to, I'll pay you to rake my leaves." I said, no, I don't want money. I just want to teach my children how to serve others. You know, Ryan, I never had anyone who would not let us rake their leaves. Yeah, and the kids loved it, you know? And when they grow up with that attitude, we're here to serve other people. And you give them examples like that and experiences, chances are it's going to be easier for them as an adult to become a loving person.
Yeah, and I think one of the things you say in the book, which is about, you know, they will copy what we model, not what we say. It's monkey see, monkey do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we do need to use words and teach them, to be sure.
Yeah.
But we need to model what we're teaching them.
Yeah, and this is the thing that has really kind of supercharged my intentional parenting, shall we say. I've always had a heart for wanting to be the best parent I could be, but sometimes I think sometimes you've really got to get to know yourself, know your values, your maybe your love languages. You need to understand self, because parenting can be stressful, right? Particularly when you're in a relationship with other people, like iron sharpens iron, right? and I think someone said to me the day, like, the purpose of a relationship is self-awareness or something like that, self-discovery, because we learn about ourselves in relationship with partners and children. And I don't think it's until I really got clear on who I am that I really started to go, okay, well, this is how I affect people both positively and negatively. And then that's how I can then start to be more conscious with the way I show up in the home, both with my wife and with my children. You talk about the five healthy traits of a healthy family. We've just covered the first one, which is about having a family with a heart for service. The second one is all about having husbands and wives who relate intimately. How do we grow in intimacy? And I guess before we do that, why might intimacy be something that is lacking within a relationship?
Yeah. Well, I think sometimes when you hear the word intimacy, people think of the sexual part of marriage. Mm-hmm. It's far more than that. You know, when God said it's not good for Adam to be alone,
yeah,
and he created Eve and instituted marriage, he is picturing for us what marriage is supposed to be like. In fact, it says they become one, mm-hmm. You know. So it's intellectual intimacy, where we're sharing our ideas and our thoughts and our dreams. Mm-hmm. It's emotional intimacy, where we're sharing love. And also sharing our emotions. If we had, what kind of day did you have today? What happened today in your life? And what did you feel like today? We're sharing our emotions with each other freely. And then we're sharing social intimacy. That is, we do things together outside the home. You know, this may be going to a ball game. It may be taking a walk down the road. It may be having dinner with friends. But we share life, you know, socially with each other and with other people. And then obviously there's physical intimacy, to be sure, and spiritual intimacy. We're sharing our walk with God. And I don't mean, Ryan, that we're preaching to each other. you know, I read this in the Bible this morning and you need to hear this, you know.
Well, that's really interesting, because when my wife and I, we went through our struggles, she found faith and I didn't have a faith. So I have a faith that's, I guess, 4 years old. So I understand the concepts of why faith can help in a relationship now, because I know that with my faith, I become a better human being for myself in this family. And she has that faith for her purposes too, not for me to use that over her, not for me to say, yeah, well, you know, you're not following this. It's no, that the purpose of my faith is so that I may have better fruits of my spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you're sharing with your spouse, you know, honey, this morning I was reading in the Bible and this really, really spoke to me. And you're just talking, sharing with them something that God impressed on your heart this morning, you know. Yeah. And also, you know, obviously going to church is sharing a spiritual experience. When you stand beside your spouse and hear them sing the songs, you know, and then you come home and talk about, you know, what can we learn from what the minister said today. So intimacy involves all of those things. And in a healthy family, a husband and wife will have an intimate relationship. And this, again, is a model for children as to what marriage is all about. If children grow up in homes where their parents are always at each other, you know, quibbling over this, that, and arguing and raising their voice and screaming at each other, they don't have the picture of what a healthy marriage is. Mm. So when they, you know, get married years down the road and they're operating on their own selfish nature, they'll likely do what their parents did because, well, that's the way mom and dad did it, you know, so we'll argue our way through life.
Yeah.
But you don't have to repeat the pattern, you know. If you learn what a healthy family looks like, God can help you have a healthy family.
Yeah, and I think, you know, obviously if we are extrapolating, you know, Genesis, the idea that the serpent says is that there's something outside, that you will be, if you just have something outside of this arrangement, then you will have all that you need. And how much of the world is contributing to this belief that we'll be happier when? And, you know, I was led the lie, then the belief that I would be happier or my children would be happier if I wasn't present in the home. There was a point where the serpent came to my heart and said, your family will be much happier if you and mum weren't together, because at the moment there's conflict. That is a lie. I truly know now that we've gone on 4 years of restoration, I know that to be a lie. But so often people believe that lie, that actually it's better to have separate if you don't. What's your view on that?
Well, I think it's a common factor. And I think it's because two humans, husband and wife, will never agree on everything.
Yeah.
Because we're human. We have different ideas. We have different histories. We have different emotions. And we will have conflict. The problem is not conflict. The problem is when we don't know how to solve conflict. And so we end up arguing. Because I know I'm right, and I'm trying to convince her that she's wrong and I'm right. Well, she knows she's right. She's trying to convince me. And often we get into arguments. Well, nobody enjoys that. You know, that's not satisfying. And after a while, you have these arguments again and again and again, and there's no love. You're not feeling love. Just by nature, you want to get out of that. And you think it would be better for the kids if I got out of this. The reality is, however, it's not the problem that you disagree on things. It's that you've never learned how to treat the other person as a human. Mm-hmm. Honey, I'm going to let you have ideas that I would never have. Mm-hmm. And when we differ, I want to hear your idea. Mm-hmm. And we try to put ourselves in their shoes and look at the world through their eyes and understand where they're coming from. So we can honestly say, you know, honey, I see now what you're talking about, and I can see how that makes sense. Now, let me share my perspective. And you listen empathetically, and then they listen to you, and then you say, okay, obviously, we disagree on this. How can we solve the problem? And you spend your energy looking for a solution rather than spending your energy trying to win an argument. So if you learn how to resolve conflicts and treat each other with respect and dignity as you walk through the conflict, you'll work through those things. And there are going to be conflicts as long as you live, but they're easier the longer you go in, you know, really handling them in a healthy way.
Yeah, you're right. I was in a workshop yesterday with a team, and I just said to them, I said, you know, many people believe that a healthy team has an absence of conflict, but I think a healthy team is one that can become stronger through that conflict.
Yeah, absolutely.
One of the third principle then is, the third trait is about having parents who guide. So many parents outsource their guiding of their children to what would be typical mainstream education, and they forget how much they're doing their children a disservice by teaching them about life, about who they are, their identity, their values. In many respects, peers are mattering more than parents in today's day and age. How do you speak into those parents who could step it up a little bit and be active guiders within the home?
Well, you know, I think most parents want to be that, and yet many times it's because of the busyness of life that they don't play that major role there. But the fact is, we're teaching them, even if we are not actively involved in them. We're teaching them by our lack of involvement. So, you know, the biblical words are teaching and training. It says, raise your children up. The King James Version of the Bible said, bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. But one of those words has to do with, one of those words is the word teaching them. And then the other is actions. And words and actions go together when you're training children. Yes, we're going to explain things to them. We're going to tell them what the rules are, for example, all of that. But we're also going to tie actions with that. For example, a mother goes to the door at 6 o'clock and says, Johnny, dinner. And Johnny's playing next door. Johnny just keeps on playing. Yeah. His mother goes back in 5 minutes and repeats that.
Yeah.
Then she repeats it again. The fourth time she says, Johnny, get home. And Johnny comes home. Why? Because he's learned that if he doesn't come home when mother says, get home, she will come down there and take him by the hand and walk him home. And he does not want mother in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Now, if you want him to come home after four calls, that's your choice. If you want him to come home on the first call, you just take the action that you used to do with number four and put it on number one. But tell Johnny, you know, I heard this program and I got an idea. From now on, I'm going to call you one time, and if you don't come, I'm going to come down there and walk you home. You won't walk him home but one time. He'll come every time. It's words and actions, and little things and big things, in teaching and training our children.
Yeah, you've just alluded then to this this idea of children who obey their parents, which is leads nicely into the healthy trait number four. What is the essence then of an obedient child?
I think children have to learn, and that they would not use this word, but that the parents are the authority in the home.
Yeah.
Just as God is the authority for all of us. And so the parents make rules, and those rules are designed to flow out of the love of those parents. You know, every rule that God has given us to live by have come from his love. If he says, don't do this, it's because he loves us. If he says, do this, it's because he loves us. He wants us to have the best possible life. And that's what we want for our children. So when we have that idea, we're going to have rules or guidelines, whatever you want to call them. But with every guideline, we need to tell the child what the consequences will be if they don't follow the guideline. And so let's say that we're going to say, we're not going to throw the ball inside the house. We throw the ball outside, but not in the house. If you do, the ball goes in the trunk of the car for 2 days and you can't play with it. And if you break something, we'll have to pay for it out of your allowance. Now, you know, and the child knows what the consequences are. So if the child breaks that particular rule, all you have to do is say, Johnny, you know, I so love you. You seldom break the rules, but you know you broke this rule, right? And you threw the ball and you broke the vase. So let's take the ball and go to the car. And he starts crying, but he knows it's fair. He knows it's coming, you know, and then you take the allowance and pay for the broken vase. Johnny is learning how to respect authority.
Yeah.
You know what I hear, Ryan, from public school teachers? is the biggest problem they have is keeping discipline in the classroom so they can teach something, because the children don't respect the authority of the teacher. So if they don't learn how to respect our authority in the home and obey us in the home, then they likely are going to be lawless when they get to be adults. It's a huge factor, and it's a part of a healthy family that children will have the attitude of obeying. I don't mean they'll always obey. But they have an attitude of obeying, and they will honor the parents for that. And as adults, we model that for them as we honor our parents. You know, we're adults, but our parents gave us life. So now we're honoring them in whatever way we can. And we tell our children what we're doing for our parents, because someday they may need to be taking care of us. So we're teaching them how to honor their parents by honoring our parents.
Yeah. And the one liner that I absolutely love from this book is it says, honor is in the heart of adult children.
Absolutely. And, you know, even if our parents weren't perfect, and none of them were, we can honor them for giving us life. We would not be here if they had not given us life. So there's always a reason for honoring our parents.
Yeah, I think just to summarize what I've heard is children submit to our authority if there's a context of love. If there's a connection and there's a belief that there's love present, then there's a submission to authority.
And that's why one of the things I say is, when you have to do discipline, wrap it in love. If the child's love language is words of affirmation, then you give them positive words before you administer the discipline, and positive words after, so that that child feels loved. And now, and they already know that, that, you know, they're going to have to suffer the consequences. But if they wrap it in love, they're going to accept it as being, this is the right thing. This is what should have happened.
One of my community members, Ash, she's asked a question around the role and the impact of trauma within childhood, and how does that manifest and interact with their later, should we say, love language?
Yeah, well, I think trauma can be traumatic in the life of a child. There's no question about it. And it does impact that child, typically for years, from years to come. And that's why if a child has gone through trauma, the parents can help in terms of letting them talk about what happened and how they felt about that, you know. But if the parents are the ones who caused the trauma, then that child's going to have help outside the home, somebody helping them, helping that child walk through that trauma and realize that's not the way things should have been. And, you know, parents can help if they have caused trauma in a child's life. They can help by apologizing. You know, they're older now. They realize what they did. So they apologize to the child for what they did. And children will likely forgive you if you're willing to apologize.
So it's not just as simple as the one that we lacked becomes our primary one as adults, primary love language.
No, I know. And I don't really know, you know, people have asked me, how does the love language develop? Or are we born with it? I don't really know. I just know it's there early. By 4 years of age, you can tell a child's love language just by the way they respond to you and other people. You know, my son's love language is physical touch. When he was that age, I'd come home from work, he'd run to the door, grab my legs, and climb on me. He's touching me because he wants to be touched, you know? Our daughter never did that. At that age, she would say, "Daddy, come into my room. I want to show you something." She wanted quality time. So it's there very early in a child's life, and learning a child's love language and speaking it, you know, often, you meet that emotional need that the child has for love.
There's so much richness and depth in the book that our audience are just going to have to go get the book rather than just take this conversation. But I love what you say about your book is that it's not to be read, but it's to be experienced. I've often said the same about this podcast. It's not necessarily to be listened to, but to be experienced and to be implemented, because I think the transformation becomes possible when you apply some of these things.
Yeah. What we do in the book, we actually give a code where they can go online and it'll give you a lot of things that you can do to apply the things we're talking about. Now, I give some illustrations in the book, but if people really want to build a healthy marriage, They work through the book, and then they can download all that, all the stuff that's online. It's all free, and really focus in on each of these five. And if a couple begins to focus in on these and do some things to begin to build them into the relationship, you're on the road to having a healthy family.
I'd love to finish the draw the conversation in with the final trait, which is important to me, which is about husbands who love and lead, you know, a loving leader within the home. And as I said earlier on the outsourcing of education, there's a lot of outsourcing of men to the leadership within the home, to the wives and the partners. And why might that be a disservice? What is the importance of the role of the father within the home?
Well, you know, the scriptures say the husband is the head of the wife as Christ is the head of the church. I think that's been grossly misinterpreted many times. You know, husbands will say, well, the Bible says, I am the president, you are the vice president. I have the final word. Or I am the general. I make the rules and tell you what to do.
I'm the tyrant.
No, the model is Jesus. We're to be the head as he was the head. What did the head of the church do? He died for the church. Ooh, and that's why I use the word loving leader. Don't ever separate those two words. The husband gives his life, if necessary, for his wife, the benefit of his wife. He's there to serve her. And, you know, if a husband takes that kind of leadership, I don't think many wives are going to walk away. And I did a little research, Ryan, and found out that in our country, not a single wife has ever murdered her husband while he was washing dishes. Not one. It's hard to reject a loving leader. And, you know, this really was what turned my own marriage around, Ryan. My wife and I had a lot of struggles in the early years. And I remember when I finally said to God, I don't know what else to do. I mean, this is not working. You know, I don't know what to do. And as soon as I said that, there came to my mind a visual image of Jesus on his knees washing the feet of his disciples. And I heard God say to me, that's the problem in your marriage. You don't have the attitude of Christ. Hit me like a ton of bricks, because I remember what Jesus said. He said, after he washed their feet, he said, you call me teacher and master, and you're right, but in my kingdom, the way you lead is by serving. And I knew that was not my attitude. You know, my attitude in the early years was something like, look, I know how to have a good marriage. If you'll listen to me, we'll have one.
Yeah.
But I said, Lord, forgive me, you know, forgive me, and please give me the attitude of Christ. Three questions made this practical for me, Ryan. When I was willing to ask these three questions, my marriage began to change. They're simple questions. Question number one, honey, what could I do to help you? Question number two, how could I make your life easier? Question number three, how could I be a better husband? And when I was willing to ask those questions, she was willing to give me answers. And when I began to do those things, within 3 months, it didn't turn around overnight, but within 3 months, she started asking me those three questions. And when you get it going that way, you know, the husband takes the leadership in reaching out. He starts the whole thing. He doesn't sit around waiting for her. No, he's going to take the lead in this. And then she's going to reciprocate. And you're going to have the kind of marriage you wanted to have when you both have that attitude toward each other.
Yeah, there's a lot of, there's a lot of narrative in the world that talks about misogynistic, patriarchal. But for me, that's just the heart of a relationship where the service is postured on each other. And that's that win-win. And as much as I know about the whole polarity of masculinity, femininity, that's the type of love where women get to rest in. That safety, that provision, that protection. It's not about control and power over. It's about love and service. And one of the things that you articulate really nicely within the book is about the characteristics of a loving father. And I won't list them all, but, you know, some of them are about what we've just talked about, you know, providing, protecting, loving unconditionally. But there's also this like softer side, this like ability to connect with your children, to be emotionally available, to play. Like, how do men who are either conditioned out of their hearts because they've been told that that's weak and not to show vulnerability, or maybe they're too busy because work's got the best of them and family's got the rest of them, how do we speak into those men and encourage them to take time to play?
You know, I think if husbands and fathers do not take time to interface with their children on the level where that child is, they're going to live to regret it. And that child is going to grow up to have missed something. Brian, I had a very sad experience recently. I was at the cemetery burying a father. His son was 25 years old. I found out I didn't know the son, but I started talking to him afterwards. And I asked him something like, you know, what kind of relationship did you and your father have? And he said, I never knew my father. I said, what do you mean? He said, my dad had a job where he was gone all week long. He came home on Friday night. On Saturday, he played golf all day with his friends. On Sunday, he slept till noon, and then he watched TV all afternoon. He said, I never really got to know my father. And I walked away with tears in my eyes. And I thought, how sad. The father was meeting the financial needs of the family, you know, but he missed out on the relationship with that son. And so if we can understand life's greatest meaning is found not in things, but it's found in relationships. And so from the very beginning, if you can get on the floor when that kid's crawling and let them crawl all over you, you're on the road, and then you go to the sandbox with them, and then you just walk with them as they grow up. And in the teenage years, you know, you can do things with them, and you just grow up, and they grow up having seen what a father is like. A father's loving and caring and has fun with us. This is really the satisfying part of being a father, is spending time with the children.
The one liner in your book that's really kind of captured me for this one is about the father who chooses to be a loving leader believes in his own values because he's found them to bring him a level of satisfaction, peace of mind, and purpose in life. And I think that kind of represents nicely what I was trying to articulate earlier, which is when I do the self-discovery, when I know who I am, the values that I have, I become more encouraged, or I have the self-accountability to help my family grow in that too.
Yeah, and I think the closer that our behavior models our beliefs, the more respect and the easier it is for children to respect their parents and their wife to respect their husband. If we say we believe in certain things, but we don't practice those things, it's hard for the wife or the children to respect us because we've told them, you know, what we believe and we've taught them that, but then they don't see it in us. And that's why every day, you know, as our kids were growing up, I said, Lord, help me to model for my children what I say I believe in whatever area it is, because as we've said earlier, our model for that child speaks more deeply than even our words do. So really, really important. But of course, first of all, we got to have, you know, biblical ideas in our own mind as to what God wants us to be like. If we follow the principles that God laid down for us, we're going to have the best possible life. We're going to have the best possible family. We are not going to be perfect because all of us are fallen creatures. We don't have to be perfect. You do have to apologize when you fail. Children need to learn that, yes, daddy needs to say, honey, I'm sorry that I lost my temper and I yelled at you. A father should not talk to a child like that. And I'm very sorry. I hope you'll forgive me. Some people have said to me, Ryan, if I apologize to my children, won't they lose respect for me? I say, no, they gain respect. They already know what you did was wrong. You know? when you acknowledge it and ask forgiveness, you're teaching them another important skill in life, 100%. How to apologize when you fail.
100%. As I'm reflecting, as I'm listening to you speak, I think, you know, maybe some of my earlier years were characterized by a lack of respect for the father figure, and therefore was never going to be a willfully submitting person to God, to be a man of faith. There was no way I was surrendering and submitting to that authority. So for me, in an absence of faith, it sounds like a control story. Why would I want to be told what to do? I'm going to rebel against that. But the more and more I connect with the love of God, it is a love story. It is a playbook for how to have heaven on earth.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything that he laid down for us is because he loved us. And if he says, don't do something, it's because he loves us. And if we do it, we're going to be worse for having done it, you know? And if he says, do this, if you really want to have the best, you do it. Yeah. And if you fail to do it, then you miss out on something that God wanted to be a part of your life.
Yeah, super conscious of your time. My last question about the book is you end with a call to action for the husbands to become loving leaders, but also for the wives to develop the fine art of encouraging. Why is encouragement so important?
Well, you know, I think all of us by nature, again, depending on the family we grew up in, but all of us need encouragement. And when a wife says, you know, in her mind, half the things he does are bad. Well, rather than focusing on the bad, why don't we start encouraging him on the good things he's doing? Maybe he took the trash out one time this month. Rather than saying, about time you took the trash out, why not say, honey, I really appreciate you taking the trash out. That is a real help to me. You know, encouragement makes you want to do it again. But if you're just criticizing me for something, you know, then I'm less inclined just by nature to come back and do things that are meaningful to you. So I think a wife plays a tremendous role in helping her husband become the person that he wants to become and God wants him to become by being the voice of God, giving him encouragement over the things that he's doing well.
Yeah, I love that. And I think, you know, many people say, well, why should I have to do that to get the man or the woman that I want? And I think the thing that comes to mind every time is our conversation last time, which was when you were talking to your client about vacuuming or something like that. And you were like, I prefer my wife when she feels loved.
Yeah, absolutely.
I much prefer to be in a relationship with my wife. So it's about that, isn't it? It's not about should I have to do these things. It's about, well, do you want to see the loving version of, do you want to see your spouse feel loved and have the best version of themselves emerge?
Yeah. And I think, you know, there's great satisfaction in a husband and a wife when they see their spouse feeling loved and enjoying life. And we play a key role in that, you know, by speaking their love language and by all the other things that we've talked about. So there's great reward in being a husband and our wife who's reaching out and serving each other. There's great satisfaction in that. And the same thing's true with our children. And, you know, I hope our audience doesn't hear me saying, you know, because listen, I know there's a lot of single moms out there that are raising children and I admire them, you know, and most of the time it's not their fault that they are alone. If you're a single mom and raising kids, try to find a Christian godly man in your church who might spend some time with your children, and especially with your sons, if they don't have contact with their father. They need to have contact with a male that can be a model for them and do things with them. And there are lots of fathers that would do that for children, you know, outside their home, if they were just asked, you know. So don't feel like that. It's impossible for your child to have a male model. Typically, in the churches, you can find people who are willing to do that.
Yeah, there's so much goodness within the book around the nuances around what that really means, what that really gives, how that starts to shape their identity, their sexual identity. There's so much goodness in that book, and definitely encourage people to check it out. I have a word here, always better than yesterday, and it's called heartprint. And the word really represents the legacy that we leave behind, the ripple effect, the possibilities that we create for other people. Dr. Gary, I just love for you to just take a moment and consider what you think the heartprint of a healthy family would be.
Well, I think it would be that the children come to adulthood with a deep sense of gratitude for their parents. And in fact, in this book, I let our children, we have two, boy and a girl, I let them weigh in on the family they grew up in. But I think that's where the heart print is. It's in the lives of our children. And when they grow up and have a model of what it's like to have a healthy family, and then we see them doing that. You know, the Apostle John said this in 3 John verse 4, I have no greater joy than to hear that my children walk in truth. Now, he probably was talking about his spiritual children, but it's certainly true of biological children. Mm-hmm. When you see your children come to adulthood and see them walking in truth, walking with God, it's a tremendous heartfelt satisfaction. Mm-hmm. So that's the joy I wish every parent could experience. Now, that doesn't mean that we can control our children as adults. You know, they're free. Listen, God's first two children went wrong. So it's not that, you know, you do this, 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 and your children will do what's right. They're adults. They're free. They're made free by God. And yes, sometimes they make poor choices, but we love them even when they make poor choices, just like God loves us. In fact, God says Christ came to die for us while we were sinners. Mm. And so if we have adult children who are sinners, we want to reach out and love them in spite of the choices they've made.
Thank you for the way with which I know that there's infinitely more light in this world because of your work, because of your willingness and your obedience to share your heart with the world, to share your family with the world. I love the way that your children have contributed to the book too. And when you've invited an observer into the home as well, there's a whole story there too that we could have talked about. And the last thing I'll say is that, you know, you expand on this idea that a healthy family creates a healthy society, and a healthy society is a world of harmony, and that when you do these things, you don't just impact your own children, but thousands of young observers in search for the family that they've always wanted. It's sending people out a little bit more like love so that people may find that. I am in the corner of some incredible human beings who, like me, have been in search for the family that they've always wanted. And to have conversations with incredible human beings like you, I just want to honor you and thank you for all that you're doing to have an impact and a ripple effect to people that you may never ever meet. And I just hope, Dr. Gary, that every now and again one of those ripples comes back to you and you get to experience the full impact of the work that you've put out into this world.
Well, thank you, Ryan. It's very, very encouraging through the years, the people who say, you know, I read this book, I read that book that you wrote, and it literally saved our marriage, or it really helped us with our parenting. It's very, very encouraging. And, you know, years and years ago, and I'm glad I learned this early on, Jesus said in John 15, verse 5, without me, you can do nothing. And later Paul said, but in Christ, I can do everything that God has in mind for me. And I think that's what all of us want, you know, just to do what God has equipped us to do and use our talents and abilities and whatever else we have for the benefit of other people. That brings the greatest satisfaction in life.
Absolutely love it. Dr. Gary, thank you so much for a second time. I'll share all your good links in the show notes, especially the book that's coming out, 5 Traits of a Healthy Family. And I'd be honored if you'd leave us with a final thought from your good self.
Take the first step. Pick up on one idea that you can do differently that will enhance your family relationships.
Beautiful. Thank you, brother.
Hey, my friends, thank you for making it to the end. I hope that our time spent together today has left you a little bit better than before you push play. I'd really appreciate if you just took a moment to leave a review to allow me to meet more people where they are and hopefully leave them a little bit better too. If you're curious to know how I, through Always Better Than Yesterday, can serve you, your team, your organization, then head to alwaysbetterthanyesterday.com to connect. And while you're there, let me know one or two things that you're going to do as a result of listening to this conversation. I absolutely love hearing your thoughts, your reflections, and the things that this spark in your own heart and mind. If you want more insights from my heart and mind, I do send out short episodes on a Monday, Tuesday, Thursday and Friday. And again, I hope that they serve you well. I appreciate you listening. I'm Ryan Hartley, host of the Always Better Than Yesterday podcast, a podcast for heart-centered leaders just like you. Keep leading, my friends. Always love.